Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Lesbi Mommies Radio. I'm your host, Elizabeth Kaliva. Thank you so much for tuning in. Happy New Year to all of you. I can't believe it's 2015. It's totally crazy. But I'm actually really happy it's 2015. I think good things are in store for all of us this year. So many blessings to you all this year. I personally hope I get pregnant this year. So let's see. Fingers are crossed. So tonight we are tackling a really awesome question, and that is the question of same-sex adoption. Up till now, our show is pretty much only focused on information for lesbian couples that are trying to conceive biological children. But what happens when conception's not happening easily, like for me, unfortunately, or it's not happening at all, or you're just considering adoption as one option to grow your family? Adoption could just be something that you're really drawn to. You know, there's a lot of kids out there that need a good home, and that's how you want to grow your family, which is amazing. So there's a ton of questions for us as same-sex adoption or same-sex couples wanting to consider adoption. So we have a show completely dedicated to that tonight, which is very, very cool. So I'm very happy to welcome Adoption Connection on. They are a nonprofit adoption agency based in Northern California, and they've welcomed LGBTQ couples and individuals throughout the agency's 30-year history. We have Amy and Tara on to speak with us, and they're going to answer several questions such as, what are the different types of adoptions? What are some of the things that same-sex couples should be thinking about? Do you need to be legally married? Are placements harder with same-sex couples? So we're going to go into all of that on this show. Before we get started, I do have a couple of announcements. Actually, I only have one announcement. First, I just want to give a shout-out to one of our listeners, Anna Nelson, for this week's topic suggestion. So awesome. She emailed me with this topic, and it's such a good one. I'm kind of embarrassed that I didn't come up with it on my own, actually. But thank you, Anna, for emailing that to me. And anyone else, if you have any suggestions for topics that you want to hear, please, please, please email me. I would love to hear them, or any other feedback on the show, and you can reach me at elizabeth@lesbymommies.com. Elizabeth with a Z and lesbymommies with a Z. You can find us online at lesbymommies.com. Definitely like us on Facebook at facebook.com/lesbymommiesradio. And all of our past shows are on iTunes, Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio, and of course, lesbymommiesradio.com. This is a pre-recorded show, so no opportunity to call in with questions. Sorry, I know this is probably one of those shows you probably have a lot of questions for, but you'll have to reach out to Adoption Connection after the fact if you want more information. All right, let me get to our show. Let me introduce our guests, Amy and Tara. But first, a little about Adoption Connection. Adoption Connection is one of the longest-running open adoption agencies in the country and was founded in 1984. Based in Northern California, Adoption Connection has helped over 2,500 families grow their families through open infant adoption. Adoption Connection completed its first adoption with a same-sex couple back in 1993, and it continues to work with the LGBTQ community to complete successful adoptions. Amy Cunningus, LCSW, has been an Adoption Connection caseworker for more than 8 years. As an adoptive parent herself, she brings a wealth of personal and professional experience to each adoptive parent meeting. Amy and her wife adopted their son through the open adoption process. Tara Noon, MSW, is Adoption Connection's Director of Adoptive Parent Services. A strong advocate for open adoption, Tara works formally to help adoptive parents and birth families build community together around adopted children. She finds particular inspiration in knowing that every adoption story is exceptional and contributing to the match by finding the right outcomes for families. Tara built her family through open adoption with the help of Adoption Connection in 2008. I think that's it. Amy and Tara, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, well, thank you. I really, really, really appreciate you guys taking the time to talk with me today. So let's start with the kind of first basic questions, which, what are the different types of adoptions?
Well, I can start with this one. In general, you would be making a choice between domestic newborn adoption, which is almost exclusively open here in the United States. There's also the foster to adopt program, which is available through counties across the United States, and then lastly, international. I would say that in general, the domestic newborn adoption and foster to adopt options are the ones most available to LGBTQ parents. And the international options are very slim at this point.
Now, is that because there's more of a stigma with LGBT adoptive parents internationally? Or why would that be?
Well, a lot of, and I should say from the outset that we, my particular agency, we have stepped out or stepped back from international adoption, so we're no longer experts on the lay of the land currently, but it is true that international adoption has becoming more difficult in general. Many of the countries that were once open are now closed, and of those who remain open, yes, in a lot of cases, those countries are not welcoming of placing children with same-sex couples.
Yeah, I'd heard that. I've heard stories of lesbian couples that have one like a lesbian woman that adopted, and she said she had to not disclose anything about her sexual identity in order to have that adoption go through. But, okay, that's good to know. So domestic newborn adoption, and you said that's mostly open. What is the difference between open and closed?
Well, Amy, did you want to take that one?
Yeah. I will say that closed adoption is, I think, in the traditional sense, when the birth parents and the adoptive parents do not meet each other. And that has really fallen out of favor across the country. Open adoption is in some ways a really broad term because it's defined differently in every adoption scenario. But in general, what it has come to mean is the adoptive parents and the birth parents meet each other. They match together, that there's a mutual selection process. And there may or may not be continuing contact with the families after the baby is placed in the adoptive family home.
Okay, gotcha. So in an open adoption, the birth parents, do they select the adoptive parents?
It's really a mutual selection process,
it
yes.
It is, okay. Interesting. Okay, cool. And then those are mostly only newborns. So older children are pretty much done only through the foster adoption program?
Primarily. But I should also point out that it's also possible to adopt infants through the foster system.
Oh, okay. And that's, you said that was mostly a public through like the county or something like that?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
The difference too is that in domestic open adoption, private adoptions, this is a voluntary process. The birth families have made a choice for themselves that an adoption plan is what is right for their families. Through the foster system, it's more the case that the child has been removed from the home for some reason.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes a ton of sense. Okay. So then, you know, as same-sex couples, obviously, 2013, 2014 were huge years as far as gay marriage passing in, I think it's like 35 states now. So just talk about the generality of the legality of same-sex and LGBT adoptions. And then if it matters if you're legally married or not, just how that all works how that all comes into play now.
Well, it's a changing landscape. I think as of this week, it's 36 states with Florida coming on board with marriage. Interestingly, you know, marriage and adoption are two very separate legal processes, and so you're not required to be married in order to adopt. And states have regulated the processes separately. So we operate, you know, across the country, but each state handles things slightly differently. And so I don't know if, Tara, if you have more specifics from having checked in lately with the lay of the land there.
Right. Well, I would actually say it's kind of this, the specifics have gone out the window, I think, in terms of things that we can really talk about. Every adoption is different and is constructed differently, and I would say particularly given, you know, the wonderful changes in laws, what this means now is that we are kind of working out, it is often the case when we have families who have who are working with a birth family in a different state outside of California, the adoption professionals in the other state are in the process of working their way through changes in their own local laws. So we work together with the other agency as things are like very, there is a very live shifting kind of all over the country happening right now. But luckily, I mean, we've got, you know, as an agency, we've got contacts all over the country. We've got agencies that we've been working with for 30 years, and we work it out together. So it's just, that is a long way of saying it is really, it is ultimately doable, but very incredibly difficult to generalize right now.
Yeah, gotcha. So in California, I read that same-sex couples can adopt jointly, meaning they can adopt as a couple. And then I know that in other states, often one parent does the adoption and then you later do a second parent adoption. So I guess that, like you said, it's going to vary state to state, but in some states you can openly be a couple and adopt, in other states you might not be able to be.
And what I've seen in doing this now for 9 years or so is that states that previously required only one parent adopting and then the other parent doing the second parent adoption, they came back to California, are changing that as well in the face of the changing landscape. So it is just, I think the country is shifting in that, away from that process to both members of a couple adopting simultaneously from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Right. Awesome. So are there any other legal hurdles that a same-sex couple or LGBT parent should look into before starting the process, besides their own state's laws about it?
I would say there are no legal hurdles.
Okay, cool.
No, and I think that particularly if you are working with an open adoption, it's hard to investigate in advance. You don't know where the birth family lives, you know, like who you will be connected to and where they will ultimately live. And so that's a situation that's got to be evaluated, and the path through gets worked out kind of live while you're going through the match and doing the adoption.
Okay, that's actually a perfect segue to my next question, which is, what does the adoption, the process consist of? What are all the steps? How does it go?
Well, I'll start as a caseworker who does home studies. The first process is really completing the home study, and that term is in some ways a misnomer. It's not really studying your home, although we do one visit in the home just to see where the baby's going to be raised. But it really consists of couples filling out a questionnaire about their own life history and their childhood and their history of their relationship and how they came to make this decision to pursue adoption. And then couples will meet individually and as a couple with a caseworker like myself to talk about these issues and talk about, you know, how they came to decide that they want to pursue adoption, what they think might be some of the same, some of the differences and some of the similarities in raising a child who comes to you through adoption versus biology. You know, thinking through how a child will experience having come to the family through adoption, and so it's a series of meetings, and then a home study report is written up for. LGBTQ clients, I will also ask them a little bit about their coming out process and how they came to their gay identity, and also explore with them their family of origin or extended family's comfort level with their relationship, because having a baby can really out the extended family in a way that, you know, a couple where you just don't talk about it when they come home to the small town. It's a little different when you come home, and it's clear that a same-sex couple's raising a baby together. And then we also talk about potential adult influences in the child's life, especially if, for all adults raising a child, but especially if a child is of one gender and then the parents are of the other gender, you know, who are the variety of influence is going to be in that child's life. And so that's the home study process, and then I will kick it to Tara for the next phase of the adoption process.
Yeah, thanks. So, and I should add that the home study process, some version of it is required for any type of adoption you would do. You know, domestic open adoption, through the foster adopt system, or international. They're all of these processes require a home study. And, you know, in advance of that, probably the couple would be, or the individual adopting, would have made a choice about which avenue they're going to take, have the home study involved, and then start, depending on what sort of adoption they're going through, make a determination about outreach. And outreach is a process by which prospective adoptive couples become connected with expectant women or expectant couples who are thinking about adoption. This is specific to the realm of private domestic infant adoption. In the foster system, in all likelihood, you will be contacted. You wait until the county contacts you with information about a child placement. There is also a lot of waiting in private infant adoption, and so not a lot of waiting. It really depends. There is a variable. There's not a hierarchy of parents. You don't get in line behind the people who started ahead of you. As Amy mentioned, because this is a process of mutual choice, in your outreach process, a prospective adoptive parent will have developed materials describing themselves and participated in a means to get those materials out there. These days, mostly it's done via the internet, and this is where birth families can see prospective adoptive parents and decide who it is that they would like to meet and start talking to. It's also possible that birth families could call into an agency and talk to the agency, and then the agency can also help them. They may speak to an agency before they start seeing information about prospective adoptive families out in the world and online. So after that, there's a match, a mutually decided upon match. This is typically happens actually before the baby's born, and so it's often the case that the prospective adoptive parents have an opportunity to really get to know the birth family, maybe even, depending on logistics, attend prenatal visits, come up with a hospital plan mutually where it's possible for the adoptive family to be there for the birth of the child. And at that point, then, the baby would go home with the adoptive parents. And then what happens is that at some point, depending on state law where the birth mother is, at some point from after the birth to after hospital discharge, there's a little variability there, the birth mother would sign papers relinquishing her parental rights. And then at some point in there, typically after the birth of the child, there's something done also to terminate the birth father's rights. After that, again, depending on the state, there's a sort of an interim period between the placement and when the court allows the adoption to finalize. Here in California, that's 6 months. There are a series of post-placement visits, usually, in our case, with the same social worker who's done your home study. And these are really lovely visits, I think. Amy can speak to them, but really just to make sure that everything is proceeding smoothly, to see if there's any assistance needed, any education needed. And then when all the reports are in and all the paperwork is in, the family is allowed to finalize in court. And they're legally a family at that point. So, Amy, do you have any? That was a real kind of thumbnail of the process. But, Amy, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think that sums it up. But you do the home study first, then you do the outreach, which leads to the match, and then you bring the baby home. And then once you bring the baby home, a few months thereafter, depending on what state you're finalizing the adoption, and you then go to court and finalize. Mm-hmm. So it's really a step process.
Right.
Wow. So is there a period after the baby is born where the birth parents have the ability to change their mind?
Yeah, this is a perennial question. This is the first question that everyone asks. It depends on the state in which, particularly in which the birth mother lives. There are some states where the relinquishment is irrevocable the moment it's signed. Here in California, there are a couple options. A birth mother can request to fill out and sign the relinquishment, but have it held for 30 days before it's filed. But in general, in California, it is irrevocable once the state acknowledges receipt of it. So we do the relinquishment, the birth mother signs the paperwork, we FedEx it into the state government, and it goes through the bureaucracy, usually takes a couple days, and then we receive word officially from the state that they've acknowledged it.
Gotcha.
It's a very challenging time, without a doubt. Having gone through it myself, though, with my spouse, it is partially mitigated by the fact that you've got a newborn that you're taking care of. And that is all-consuming, and you keep your fingers crossed, and you have faith in the process, and you wait it out.
Yeah. And it is, and I've been through it as well. It is an incredibly vulnerable period, and it is kind of an unmistakable fact about adoption that, the birth parents cannot sign papers until the baby is in the world. You know, you can't relinquish parental rights if you're not yet a parent.
Mm-hmm.
Here in California, for example, the birth mother must be discharged from the hospital. And of course, then courtesy and decency requires us to give her some opportunity to get home and to recover. She's just given birth, and it is typically the case that adoptive parents will leave the hospital, take home an infant without paperwork signed yet. That's the landscape. That's what it looks like, and that's normative.
It's interesting. I mean, I can just put myself in the shoes, I guess, in both women's shoes, but on the adoptive side, I don't want to take, if the woman changed her mind, I don't want to take a woman's baby away, even if she signed the papers, And you invested all of this time, all these emotions, all this planning, you have everything done. So I can just see, like you said, vulnerable, like I can really get that that's a really vulnerable time. Gosh. Real quick, one question about the home study process. You mentioned that obviously if it's a same-sex couple, you're going to talk about their relationship. I mean, you talk about the relationship, I'm sure, both cases, but their coming out process and their families, how their families feel about it. Is there any other difference in the home study process for a same-sex couple or a LGBTQ person versus a straight couple?
No, it's really, we're all coming to this as humans who are interested in being parents, and we want to, kind of make sure that everyone has really thought through that decision and, have an awareness and comfort level with the adoption process.
Now, obviously, being an adoptive parent, there's a whole set of issues you have to deal with, which is, raising an adoptive kid and communicating that to the child and, everything that goes along with that. Is there support that comes along after the fact, or counseling, or something that helps adoptive parents understand how to tackle those issues as they come up?
Yeah, we are lucky that we live in this world of both online and actual communication, and there's a tremendous amount of wonderful support out there through workshops, through books. Our agency requires attendance at a class that provides a great reading list, but also provides the structure for an informal support group of other adoptive parents. And then we have workshops about talking to your child about adoption, maintaining birth-parent relationships. And there are a number of wonderful agencies out there that provide services like that to adoptive parents.
Awesome. I had another question, but it just went out the window as I was listening. It'll come back to me. So talk about how long that whole process takes. I mean, obviously, it's going to depend on how long it takes to find the right match. But do you give parents a general idea of how long it takes?
Yeah, I would say I would tell someone starting the process now that in general to expect it to take between 1 and 3 years from very start to finish. And there's that you can see there's a lot of variability in there. Yeah. We have folks, it will take a few months to get through the home study process and get your outreach up and running. Under the best of circumstances, it's a very time-consuming process up front. And then, I mean, there's really, we've had families chosen by birth parents for communication that ended up in a fruitful match on the very day that they started outreach. Wow. And then we've also had families who wait substantially longer than that to have communication that develops into a successful match.
Now, go ahead, yeah, sorry.
I was just going to say that I think, too, that, you know, same-sex couples coming into this process may feel that they're at a disadvantage, that birth parents might want to choose, you know, heterosexual couples. And I have to admit I had some of my own trepidation about that initially. And my experience, both personally and then working with scores of couples over the years, first I was a client of Adoption Connection and then I became an employee, it's just not the case. It's really the match process is, as I said earlier, a mutual match. And, you know, birth families choose couples based on something that resonates. And in some cases, it's the absolute fact that a same-sex couple cannot create a child biologically, and so they deliberately choose same-sex couples. I just wanted listeners to, you know, be dissuaded from thinking that they are at any sort of disadvantage. We don't see that at all, and we've done, you know, many, many successful same-sex couple adoptions over the years.
Mm-hmm. I would like to underscore that and say two things that have really struck me. One is that in working with birth families from all over the country, those who live in regions where I would suspect there's a strong cultural bias against placing with same-sex couples, I've been really overall touched to see that is not in any way the case that I would have expected. And as Amy said, that in many cases, birth parents, birth mothers particularly, one of the ways that they've articulated to me that they make meaning out of this process and this loss for themselves is helping families create a family who would not be able to make a family otherwise.
Cool. That was actually my question, so thank you for answering that. Mm-hmm. That's really good to hear. Really, really good to hear. I remembered my question that had left me earlier, which is, in an open adoption, are you there at that point? You're always known to the birth parents, and you can have a relationship with them after the fact if that's what you all choose. Or are there some sort of laws about how you handle that relationship after that process?
California has a contact agreement where you can mutually agree to some level of continued contact, and that is filed at the time of finalization, and so it is a contract. But many couples I work with do not even complete a contract. They just come to some mutual agreement about what the contact is going to look like, and it is, you know, and it evolves organically over time. So they're not strict rules about it. It's really something that families discuss together and see what makes sense logistically. And there are a lot of factors that go into that.
Cool. Okay. That makes sense. What about legal representation? Do you, as an adoptive parent, do you need to hire a lawyer, or does the adoption agency handle all that legal stuff for you?
The only circumstance in which most couples, both straight and gay, need to hire an attorney is for the birth father termination and the rights to terminate the parental rights of the birth father. And that is the only legal representation that my spouse and I needed to obtain. We were able to finalize the adoption on our own, and Adoption Connection had helped us with all the other legal paperwork to make sure that everything was done appropriately.
Right. Speaking for our agency, at least we definitely try to put together the package for finalization in such a way that families can do the whole thing themselves.
So explain why the birth father termination is separate. You've mentioned it a couple times, and I'm trying to put together why they wouldn't terminate as a couple.
If they are a couple, they will typically sign at the same time. But in many cases, they're not a couple, or it may be not entirely clear who the birth father is. There may be more than one possible candidate, and each state has different laws about the process for making sure that adequate notice has happened to potential birth fathers, and there are different legal categories for whether there's, you know, an identified birth father or potential, and I will defer to Tara on the differences if she knows those legal differences around the terminology. But you want to make sure, the bottom line is, from, you know, an ethical standpoint, you want to make sure that the rights are terminated appropriately and that the right person or persons have been notified that this baby has been born.
Right, and I would just here in California, the termination of birth father rights requires a court order, which means that something has to be submitted to court. If the birth father is signing with the birth mother, then the sort of paperwork that they, without getting into too much detail, the sort of paperwork that they fill out together is sufficient to terminate the rights. We don't have to then go to court with that. The document itself, and when it gets filed, is sufficient. When we are in a situation of what would legally be called an alleged birth father, or actually even sometimes with the other legal definition is a presumed birth father, there's something that can be presented to them, which is a waiver, which we sometimes do if it's just easier, or if based on his level of participation, that is what needs to be taken to court. So that I might have just... that may not be so helpful at that level of detail for your listeners at this point, but
no, it's good. I didn't even think about that, but that completely makes sense. That a lot of these can be women on their own that are younger. They're not couples yet. They're just, they got pregnant and they aren't ready. And the guy might not be in their life at all anymore. So that totally makes sense. And I can see that can get a little, complicated too in this process. Wow. Okay. Whew, okay. Cool. Let's see. Any other unique issues that LGBTQ couples might experience in their interactions with the birth parents when you're doing an open adoption?
I would just say that, birth parents may themselves face some resistance in their own extended families about choosing a same-sex couple for placement, and that they might need a little extra support around that, although they've made that decision. Otherwise, I don't think there are any other unique issues in terms of, same-sex adoptive parents and birth parents and their relationships and communication.
Cool. So now, for people that are interested in this, they're obviously going to need to find an adoption agency first. Talk about what are some good things for same-sex couples to look for when selecting an adoption agency.
Well, I would first want to know how many same-sex couples they've worked with over the years. And I think that would be the number one question, and assessing the level of comfort of the people at the agency across the board in their interactions with them as a couple. I mean, it's so hard for me to imagine. I think I'm biased and naive in that, I was a client of Adoption Connection, and my spouse and I were treated like every other client and with tremendous respect and given wonderful support. And now I work for that same agency, and I worked with, dozens of same-sex couples and hopefully treated them the same as I've treated the straight couples. So I just think it's important you get your gut level. If you feel like this is a place that is welcoming and supportive and has the experience or not.
Yeah.
Right. And if you see the big poster like we have in our lobby from the Human Rights Campaign awarding us for the work we do with same-sex couples, definitely that's a good sign.
Yeah.
And then I would say that also to just be really clear about doing the research that everybody has to do to pull together a successful adoption plan. Ask about statistics for placement, you know, and like make sure that this is an agency that's been around for a long time and that's accomplished and has a, you know, a proven track record of success and ethical adoptions.
Cool.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's also really important to pay attention to attitudes towards birth parents because they are, yeah. you know, an equal partner in this process, and they deserve the respect and same respect and support that the adoptive parents deserve in the process.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you raised that, Amy, because I think one of the things that's hard for potential adoptive parents to hold bear in mind at the beginning of the process is how important it's going to be later to your parenting, what you are going to be able to tell your child about the process. Was this an ethical and inclusive process of the birth family? You are not just the adoption is not a finite event. It's a lifelong process, and this is the foundation narrative of your family, and it will be so important for your own trustworthiness as a parent with your child that you engage in a clean and ethical and decent and kind process as you move forward.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about costs, because I think that's one of the things for me personally has been like, oh my gosh, just the cost that's required has been like, okay, well, I'm going to put a bunch of time and effort into making my own first because I know that it's not a cheap process. Not that IUIs and the fertility treatments for lesbian couples are cheap because they're not, but relatively. So talk about costs and what a couple should budget for this process.
You know, I would say there's a tremendous range around the country right now. Really a tremendous range. If you were looking, I mean, what I would quote from, you know, from the beginning of the home study process, all inclusive all the way through to finalization, which includes all the agency pieces, the paper, every piece, the counseling, the work with the birth family, if the birth mother potentially needs some financial assistance with housing, you know, rent or food or cell phones to stay in touch, probably the fee would be between $20,000 and $30,000. I think that would be a safe estimate. International, of course, can be much more expensive. So the FOST adopt system can be, you know, as little as a few hundred. I mean, that's typically, and that would, the money that you would spend in a FOST adopt situation would be probably mostly about securing your home if there were things that needed to be done for childproofing, that kind of thing. You know, in terms of financing that, I think it would be, it's also important to realize that some agencies charge the entire fee up front, and some do kind of pay as you go with kind of itemized fees, and you pay only for the services that you use. We're of that variety, a kind of a pay as you go, and there are other agencies out there like us, and some just require it all up front. And in terms of financing that, there's a little bit of help out there. There is a very, you know, some kind of small possibilities for grants if a family is really looking for help, but really small opportunities, I would say. There is still a government tax credit of about $13,000 once you finalize an adoption. And the cutoff, oh gosh, you'd have to talk to a tax expert, but I want to say I think it's a household income of about $120,000, $130,000. I would strongly encourage anyone considering adoption to look to their employers. A real hidden gem of a benefit is that many large employers out there offer some adoption reimbursement. You know, sometimes upwards to $5,000. So once you finalize an adoption, you can turn in some of the receipts for your expenses to your employer and they can reimburse you.
That's good to know.
Mm-hmm.
The pay-as-you-go seems a little bit more manageable because if it's 3 years and it's $10,000, I mean, that's what you're going to be paying for the kid every year anyway. Like, you can just start that process now. The upfront, I guess, is harder to swallow. Awesome. Okay, that's not as bad as I was thinking. I was thinking it was like $50,000. So that's more manageable. And I can the international, I can see why that would be more expensive because I know you have to, if you're doing international, you have to fly to the country, right? Maybe more than one time.
Yes, that's correct.
More involved. Cool. One other question I thought of. The home study process, how long does that take? Just all of that.
Typically, it takes 3 months, start to finish. And, you know, that's dependent on mutual schedules and holidays. But when I start meeting with a couple, I say this is going to take about 3 months.
Okay. That's not too bad. All right. What about any unique issues that couples face raising a child through, same-sex couples face raising a child through adoption? Can you think of any that you deal with specifically with your birth or adoptive parents?
Well, I think in some ways, actually, same-sex couples are in an advantage coming into this process because they already are different from the majority of couples out there. And so they're used to being different, and there's no hiding that fact. And so there's a level of openness already that that same-sex couples bring to adoption that I think is useful in helping their child understand that they came to them through adoption versus biology. And certainly in my own experience and with many of the couples I've worked with, kids raise the same gender issue way before they raise the adoption issue. So you kind of practice on, you know, so how come I have two moms and, you know, or two dads? And so there's a lot of practice on that. I do think that there are some societal biases that especially I've seen gay men struggle with sometimes, I've had couples I've worked with where they've been asked, you know, where's that child's mom, and assumptions that two men can't raise a baby successfully. And that's just something you need to deal with. And I think that sometimes, you know, there may be concern about role confusion on the part of the child with three moms, but that's I think again in abstract, because babies know and kids know who their parents are, and those who are raising them are the parents that are raising them, and their birth parents created them but are not raising them.
Awesome. Gosh, so much good information. I'm trying to think if there's any other questions that I have for you two. Is there anything else you want to say? Is there anything that you want to make sure to add before we wrap up while I'm thinking?
I can't think of anything.
I would just say that the process is totally worth it. It's a roller coaster, adoption is. This is what we always tell our clients. You know, we've highlighted some of the more vulnerable moments that you can encounter in an adoption situation. And it is, I'd be hard pressed to find someone to say it wasn't worth it at the end.
I would totally agree.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, the whole fertility thing is a roller coaster, too.
Yes, it is.
If you've been dealing with that, you're like, oh, I'm used to the roller coaster. Bring on another one. I love it. This has been such a great conversation. I think one of my hesitations with adoption has been concerns about the health of the birth mother and therefore the health of the child. My wife's, she has an adoptive brother who they found out later the mom was on drugs while she was with the baby. And this guy has just always had mental health issues. He's been in and out of his jail his whole life. Like, just because of a mom that was on drugs when she was pregnant. What I like about this process is that you're involved with the mom while she's pregnant. And I'm sure you guys, I mean, as the agency does, I don't know if you do you do drug testing on the moms to make sure they're not on drugs?
Well, that's kind of a can of worms. We do, I mean, we do very thorough psychosocial evaluations, and we get signed releases for medical records, prenatal records, that sort of thing. It gets really delicate around, I mean, we are fostering a relationship of trust, and adoptive families
totally.
And birth families are fostering a relationship of trust with one another. If we have suspicion about, I mean, we do ask detailed questions about substance history, that sort of thing, mental health history. If we have reason to suspect that there is drug use happening that has not been disclosed, we're completely transparent about that with the adoptive family, with the birth family for that matter. I mean, if we say, you know, we would say like, gosh, you know, your behavior is a little, there's something going on here today. Is there something that you need to tell me, you know? But in terms of, it is really delicate to
I get that.
To ask someone to be drug tested. But there are a lot of things that are done routinely in prenatal care. I'll put it that way. There are a lot of things that are done routinely. But, you know, in terms of actually compelling or insisting that someone get a drug test, that could be pretty offensive. You know?
I get that. That totally makes sense. Totally makes sense. And it seems like you probably would pick up on that. I mean, if somebody's abusing drugs, it's usually pretty obvious. So... hopefully that would be something that would be picked up on. Cool. Well, that was really my own personal just hesitation with adoption, just given what I've experienced in my wife's family. But cool. Gosh, thank you so much for taking the time. I mean, you guys obviously just, I love your website because there's so many same-sex couples. When you click on it, you can tell that you guys definitely support that process, and it's amazing, and thank you, and really appreciate you taking the time to talk today, and I appreciate you what you guys do for people, because it's really awesome work. So thank you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to be here.
It has. Thank you for having us.
My pleasure. So tell everyone where they can find you online.
AdoptionConnection.org. All one word, Adoption Connection.
And I will put that in the show notes, as well as some other links that Leah sent me earlier for the show. All right. Thank you so much, you two. Have an amazing weekend. And
you
might be hearing from me in the future.
All right.
Great. We look forward to it.
Take care.
Take care. Bye. All right, everyone. Hope that was a good show for you. It was really good for me. Well-timed, as Amy and I are like, are we going to get pregnant or are we not going to get pregnant? So, hope you enjoyed the show. Have an amazing week, and I will catch you next time.